Today's episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra at only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. Stay tuned for the Ultra Moment segment coming up later in today's episode.
And it's the big one. Continuing our series preview with the Milwaukee Bucks kicking off tomorrow night. We have on the great Matt Brooks from Nets Daily to break down takeaways from the last series, expectations for the upcoming matchup. How will we approach defending Giannis? How will we attack the length and defense of the Milwaukee Bucks? It's all here for you, friends. It's a jam-packed episode, and it comes to you right after the theme music.
Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome back to the Locked On Nets podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. It's your team, the Brooklyn Nets, every day. I'm Adam Armbrecht. If Doug Norrie was here, he'd tell you to follow him over on DFSR for all your daily fantasy betting needs. But you can also find me covering the Brooklyn Nets, of course, and also the New York Football Giants on the One Giant podcast, flying solo today and welcoming in the very special for the worldwide renowned segment now On Point with Matt Brooks. How are you, man?
Good. Worldwide. That's what we're doing out here.
We're international
podcast. This is good. I'm great, man. We got a couple of days off, not as many as I thought we'd have. You know, it's losing that. What was that, game three that they lost? Game four? I don't even remember. Doesn't matter. Game three, I think.
Cost the team lost, but they don't realize the trickle down effect to the people that are covering the team.
Exactly. It actually hurt me more than it hurt the team itself. we got a couple of days off here, but getting ready for this Bucks Nets series, a series that many are calling the NBA Finals, the real NBA Finals, which is kind of tough to argue. I'm not going to lie. So I'm excited for that. Ready for a really just interesting chess match of two teams that present different things and are kind of polar opposites in a lot of ways.
And I'd be remiss if I didn't also throw in the fact that you can find Matt Brooks writing for Nets Daily, covering the Brooklyn Nets, breaking things down, doing film also outside of those takeaways too. So don't forget that piece of it, even though if you don't know Matt Brooks and you're into the Brooklyn Nets, I'm not sure what you've been doing. The bottom line is, though, you're right. People have referred to this upcoming series as the one to watch, and that's for a bevy of reasons, right? Injuries for other rosters, the Lakers, everyone kind of thought, they fell into the seventh seed, but don't worry about it. Then AD goes down. Philly took care of the Wizards, but now what's going to happen with Embiid? All of a sudden, from all the matchup standpoints, the Brooklyn Nets and the Milwaukee Bucks, they have, I think, the best total collection of known high-end superstar talent, right? That even the most casual of NBA fan is going to go, oh, yeah, I know 12 guys on the court at all times.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's right. I just said 12 guys on the court at all times. It's five on five basketball. So there's a world where it's so good.
Maybe it's on the bench. Yeah, I don't know.
Throw two more out there.
I'm also going to venture. I'm going to say, I don't think the average fan knows Bryn Forbes. That one might be where I draw the line, because I think he's going to be a starter.
I'm going to back it off to six. I'm going to back it down to six.
I love your enthusiasm.
Yeah. So I'm so excited. I can't wait for the series to start. Please continue.
it's a really good series. And like, I'm trying not to be a downer about the other teams going down. I really am. I like let it creep into me a little bit today. You know, I was like, ah, God, of course, the injury riddled season. We have two just huge juggernaut teams and two teams that will probably challenge the most this Nets team the most outside of Milwaukee in the Lakers and the Sixers, just because of their size, which if you've been watching the Nets all year long, you know that the center rotation is a sore spot and continues to be one in the postseason. I'm not trying to say anything, but if you've been watching Blake Griffin, you know this. But on the outside looking in, I'm excited for it, as I said before.
Yeah, this is the kind of matchup that you want to get. And like you say, just to touch on it briefly, the disappointment around, like, I want the Nets to be tested. I want to see the best players and the best teams competing all the way through the Eastern Conference into the finals. And then even, you know, selfishly, I want to see, who doesn't like to see LeBron James, right? In the NBA Finals, who doesn't want to see those marquee matchups? Like, there's something not so sexy about the Utah Jazz, right?
They don't want to see Rudy Gobert's screen assist. Right. I'm ready for that in the finals.
That's not what's going to wet your whistle necessarily. But let's just, without looking back to the Boston series, where there's not much you can take away in terms of the opposition, Jeff Green is awaiting the evaluation. We'll see what that timeline looks like. The Nets are notoriously optimistic and also non-informational when they give their timelines. You know, 7 days to reevaluation doesn't really tell you a lot. But Blake Griffin, the five spot, let's just call it that. If you were going to pull anything out of that first series, it would be that the Blake Griffin from the regular season is not the Blake Griffin in the playoffs, and that the Nicholas Claxton growth trajectory is a little bit softer than we maybe anticipated. Would you lean into Nicholas Claxton in the absence of Blake Griffin? And because I know Doug's going to listen to this, does it really matter? Or do you is this just, again, is it about the superstars and you live with those results? How important is that minute share? Let's put it that way, where I don't drop the name that so many co-hosts on this podcast don't want me to use.
Okay, well, let me tell you this, because right now it's just big three or bust. Like, that's what's going on here. That's what the Nets are at this moment in time. That strategy can work. We've seen it. How much does it work against a team that is going to be much more physical, much more diligent? It's going to have defenders that are ready to go out there and try to challenge the Nets. PJ Tucker, Drew Holiday, Chris Middleton can give you some good reps. Giannis, all of these players that are going to test the Nets. I don't know. I will say, and I've said this a couple of times, if there are any takeaways that I have from the first round series, other than that the Nets have some really good offensive players, it is that there was, in my opinion, a major miscalculation with what they did with Nicholas Claxton's minutes. I think that if there was anything that was left on the table, and I think this is something that was pretty big, was it huge? No, but it was something that I think should have happened, was you wanted to just throw him out there. Like, what are the Boston Celtics with Grant Williams and Aaron Naismith and these guys that are like playing rotation minutes? Like, what are they going to do where they're going to put you in a position where you're basically rookie center is hurting you so much that you're losing games? That's not going to happen. And mind you, it wasn't like he was that bad in the minutes that they threw him out there. They threw him out within, you know, weird lineups and threw him, you know, I don't know why he's not playing with James Harden all the time. Like, that's what I would do for sure.
So he stays
involved. Like, yeah, I mean, keep him involved in offense. I think it was a huge miscalculation. Look, Blake was actually pretty good against Giannis in the regular season, held him to, man, I just looked this up, 13 of 35 shooting, which is, I believe, 35-37%, somewhere in that window right there. So that's pretty good. He's a good post-up defender. He's got a strong base, and he just has the size to kind of body up with Giannis more than Clax or KD or whoever else the Nets want to throw into the mix against Giannis. But I will say, what Claxton brings is that length, that ability to erase mistakes, including his own mistakes, because he makes a plenty of them. And I think that is so crucial. And it's weird. It feels like that Celtics series was the most sensical series to throw him out there. It's a smaller team. They're not going to back him down. He's not going to get, you know, thrown into the first row, and it's a matchup they can win no matter what. So I don't know. I don't know why it's bothered me so much, but it has.
Oh, well, listen, believe me, if Doug could tell you a story about what we talk about before we start recording, but it leans into your original point of this is the big three or bust mentality, right? So it's almost take the names out of the equation. Blake Griffin, maybe some positive defensive minutes there, certainly against Giannis during the regular season, but ultimately it's whatever's going on at the five is probably the attitude the Nets had the entire season, shy of the LMA signing and thinking that could have been something if they were able to get him obviously on the court and keep him as a part of the roster. So from that standpoint, what do you see the Milwaukee Bucks doing to consistently attack what will always be the biggest weakness when you talk about this matchup? A lack of size, maybe a lack of mobility, and if we assume the Nets are going to walk into this series like they have so far with Blake Griffin in the starting rotation, What is Milwaukee going to do to expose that time and time again?
I'm running a lot of screening action. It seems like with the way the Nets are switching, and this is especially something I would do if they throw DeAndre Jordan out there, who we know will be directly under the basket in drop coverage. I mean, he doesn't leave the paint
directly on the baseline.
Exactly. Like if they do that and they are whatever, even if they're playing Blake Griffin, he's up at the level of screens. I'm running a bunch of stuff to get all the mismatches I can. Because I'm going to assume that Kyrie Irving's guarding, guarding Bryn Forbes. Mm-hmm. I'm going to run dribble handoffs between those two. I'm going to run an inverted pick and roll and hope that the Nets switch. Inverted pick and roll, of course, being when Giannis is handling the ball, Bryn Forbes is setting the screen. Presumptively, with how the Nets have been switching, very softly switching. That's going to give them the mismatch that they're looking for, and that's going to require help. And that has been where the Bucks have been just absolutely killing teams. And you saw it against Miami. They'd get the mismatch they wanted. And even if it wasn't a mismatch per se, he would force help. And they're making those passes. He's maybe not making the Jokic skip pass that goes over like three hands. I don't know if you saw that play last night. That was amazing. That was in game 5 of the Blazers Nuggets. I'm not going to get sidetracked, I promise. But he'll make the nearest pass, and they're getting such nice swing action. That team is just working on a string right now. It finds the open guy. And I'll tell you one thing, even at their absolute best, the Nets cannot hang with that. They can't. They can't handle anything that goes beyond what the first couple seconds of offense. It just falls apart from there. They're not that type of a defensive team. So I think that's what I'm doing a lot. I'm trying to scramble those matchups. I'm trying to do what Boston did to a degree. And then if not, I'm having Giannis mash dudes in the post. I mean, I really am. I'm just letting him do what he's got to do. Middleton will get off for a couple of, off ball shots, and then he'll make, pull up threes and stuff like that. I'm also letting Jrue Holiday post up as well. If he's got, Kyrie Irving or even Bruce Brown, who I like, but I think he could post him up, or Landry Shamet too. So they have a bunch of different ways to attack. You can tell I've got a whole bunch of different things ready, and that's what makes them dangerous. They have so many different ways to win.
No, and that's why, it makes for an interesting matchup, and I think unique in the sense of when you talk about these key matchups and how you're going to expose weaknesses, et cetera, there's an element to the Brooklyn Nets composition that just says we're kind of saying we're not going to worry about 1, 2, and 3. We're only going to worry about this very specific piece that we've created with our big three talent. So I want to get into defending Giannis, obviously, and then ultimately the strength of the Brooklyn Nets, their offense, and how they can try to attack Milwaukee with some consistency. But as tough as it was, my friends, to pick the Michelob Ultra moment of the week, it has to be back-to-back-to-back possessions to close out Game 5 over the Boston Celtics, where Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and James Harden all knocked down those big triples. They brought just that level of joy on the court, happiness to the fan base, and listen, just pure pleasure, enjoyment. That's what you're seeing on their faces as the Nets took care of that gentleman sweep. You can go check out tons of other exciting Ultra moments with the hashtag Ultra Moment, and it's only worth it if you enjoy it. At only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, joy creates success. Enjoyment isn't the end game. It's the whole game. All right. So, Giannis, I've heard a rumor. He's pretty good. I don't want to speculate. I don't want to assume. You talked about the way that the Bucks are going to try to expose the weaknesses of the Nets defense and that question mark, maybe at the five, and then just some other players that aren't necessarily great defensive talents. What do the Nets try to do to slow down, speed bump Giannis and this offense as a whole? Because they are a little bit of a different beast. It seems to me like Middleton has grown into a new role there over the course of this season. He can be trusted late game. I think that Jrue Holiday offensively gives him another level of confidence. I mentioned with Kane Pittman yesterday that they don't have DiVincenzo. That's a sub, but important rotational player. But this is a team that's deep as well and can keep throwing different pieces at you. How do the Nets balance the books with guys like Bruce Brown and Landry Shamet that may still find themselves getting minutes?
The rotations. Yeah, I don't know where to start. We'll go with this. I think Blake Griffin is their best suited defender for Giannis. And I say this because he does a lot of what DeAndre Jordan does, which is, you know, he's able to post up. He's able to at least body with Giannis. But I also like that he can step out and contest that pull-up mid-range shot that Giannis was getting off. And I actually trust a little bit from him, especially that turnaround shot he's got on the baseline. That's a gorgeous kind of LeBron-looking shot. So I like Blake for that. I think he's in the starting lineup. It makes sense to have Joe Harris in there. That's just another guy that defenses have to worry about, especially with the way Blake Griffin is shooting, or should I say not shooting right now.
The biggest detriment has been that Blake Griffin has bottomed out on both ends of the floor in some ways. Like that's the real problem.
I'm not going to say I told people so. I'm not going to say it, but I did say the volume was really low with his three pointer. It's pretty low.
And it turns out it's going to be low. Yeah. And it's concerning in this upcoming series where, again, the personnel you're going up against is far better top to bottom than the first round series. So it's hard to think it's going to get better.
And this was the first time I was really kind of worried about the three pointers for him. It was against Milwaukee where I first noticed that they were just like, please go ahead, Blake Griffin, take every three you want, take more, take another five. We don't care. We're going to leave you alone. Go ahead and take your threes. You'll do the thing where you pump fake, psych yourself out, then take a dribble and then take a pull up three, which you shoot like 27% on or something like that. Like, it's just, I feel bad. I don't want to like trash him, but it hasn't been good. It just has not been a good playoff.
That pump and check dribble is always the first sign indicator this guy is not going to make it.
It's the Charles Barkley golf swing, like as a basketball shot. It's bad, and I don't know what to do about it. I'm like, and I kind of, once I noticed that in the regular season, that's when I was kind of like out in a lot of ways on him being a plus shooter. I just was like, maybe he can shoot 40%, but he's not going to shoot at the volume where you're like really forcing the defense to care about you. Like if he's hitting what, two threes a game and he's making one, like, okay, fine. It's not really going to scare defenses, and he's not even doing that. So it's a little bit of a disaster so far. But in terms of the rest of the rotation, I've loved Tyler Johnson. I think he's ahead of Landry Shamet in the rotation. And I can't believe I'm saying that, but I don't know. I don't know what Landry brings all the time. And if he's not shooting it, it's like, so I think he's sixth, seventh man. I like Bruce. Just think he's a winner. He's not always going to give you plus minutes because of lineups and stuff like that. They just have so many non-shooters now. It kind of makes it tough for him. And then I guess Clax is in there for spot minutes. DeAndre Jordan, I have no idea. And that's it, right? that's kind of their rotation.
And that's kind of the roster. I have the quick thoughts on it. But just today on the road to the finals, by the way, our NBA playoffs were brought to you by Michelob Ultra. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. At 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, we can all enjoy the games a little bit more this season as we wait in anticipation for what will be a great matchup with these superstars. But role players are going to play a factor. When you just mentioned it there, it's weird to think about, well, first of all, is a couple of things. Why did Tyler Johnson fall out of the rotation to begin with? Now, all of a sudden, he's back. Let's just assume it was a health thing that we never got to hear about, and that's what the Nets were doing. But you mentioned Shamet. Here's another guy that from the regular season to the playoffs seems to have lost his rhythm. He's undersized. Bruce Brown is an undersized guy, but you at least know you get defensive upside with him. The unfortunate piece around Blake Griffin's limitations, Shamet's struggles, and then the absence of Jeff Green is you don't have another guy as of right now, this moment, that you feel really confident to benefit on the court from the perimeter. Bruce Brown would be the perfect candidate with what he gives you everywhere else if you thought that he could hit a couple more threes with a little more consistency. And I do think there's a world where if he's on the floor in this series, he's going to get the Blake Griffin treatment of like, yeah, sure, all day. If he can just knock down one or two of them, it'll be value there. Mm-hmm. But is Tyler Johnson's size, and it's a weird way to state that, but I feel like what I liked about him all season long was his size and scrappiness defensively. Yep. And then I'll take all the results on the offensive end, which can be pretty shiny at times, but his hustle, he feels like a Joe Harris in that regard from the defensive mentality that he's had this year.
Yeah, no, I mean, he just presses full court, which is cool. I mean, that just, for me, that always jumps out. And I like what he brings. He will have mental errors like everybody on the team. And sometimes it looks like there's times where it's like, he just hasn't played with this group enough, which makes sense. Cause they just keep yanking his minutes around and it's not anything severe. It's not like a confidence thing. It's just like, he'll miss a rotation or he'll screw up a play that they're running, which they're not running plays anymore. So it's fine. Like they're barely running any coordinated offense, which is a different story in itself. So I mean, I guess those problems aren't as big of a deal, but I like him. He just, you know what you're getting in a way that I don't think it matters what lineup he's in. And that's just so nice. Like you take Bruce Brown right now, who I love. And I think he's proved every step of the way. He's proved me wrong on multiple occasions. He's just a gamer and he plays hard. I will say this, his best minutes so far have been in that small ball lineup where he's playing us the big three. And let's say Joe, or we can throw Tyler Johnson in there, or we can even throw Landry Shamet. Those have been his best minutes right now. I don't know if you can get away with those against the Bucks, who are going to be throwing at minimum PJ Tucker and Giannis at center. I don't think you can, because you throw Giannis out there at center, he's going to get every single rebound ever, because this Nets team doesn't rebound. And it's more than anything in terms of inconsistency, that's where they have it the most, I think, personally. So when you have that lineup suddenly doesn't have its spot. And on the other end of the floor, because you're playing Giannis at center and letting him roam around, and you're probably putting one of Drew or Chris Middleton or whatever, putting Pat Connaughton even, those guys are going to be moving around, being interchangeable, and they're switching defense. And I just don't think it presents the same advantages, which is a really weird thing for Brooklyn, because that's one of their best lineups right now. And one that I don't think they were banking on initially, but one they've sure leaned into as that Celtics series went on.
We're going to get into purely the stars of this series. That's how I want to close out this conversation and what those matchups look like. But role player on Milwaukee's side of things that you think has, you know, big impact, high upside in a series like this, who's one of their role guys that's going to present maybe surprising problems for the Nets, given what our rotations are going to look like?
Could be Bobby Portis. That would be number one. Didn't see much. I think Bobby Portis was injured during the regular season, so that's kind of a fun wrinkle. So he'll stretch the floor, be tough, do things. He'll do things out there. Bryn Forbes too. I mean, you saw it in the regular season. He's shooting the heck out of the ball in the playoffs, and they've just really unlocked him. You know, I see people saying, and it's a fair question, by the way, saying, okay, well, you know, where was this guy? Why had I never heard of him? He was on the Spurs, who did not take a lot of threes. His three-point volume hasn't really changed that much. This is what I do with my free time. I look up Bryn Forbes three-pointers, whatever. I'm a loser. I get it. But his three-point, the numbers haven't changed that much. The ecosystem that he's in has changed. And when you're playing around other shooters, there's less attention on you. And I think that he's really benefited from that, along with playing with Giannis, who just sets him up and is a scary two-time MVP. That makes life very, you know, easy for somebody like Bryn Forbes. So yeah, it's a tricky thing. And I really think he could hurt the Nets, especially if Kyrie Irving's guarding him. I like Kyrie as an individual defender here and there. We'll see what it looks like when he's guarding a little bit more of a guy that's running around screens and doing stuff like that. Especially if it's involved with Giannis and they're hunting for that mismatch potentially. It'll be interesting. I think he's going to go off. I feel pretty good about that.
Well, and you mentioned Kyrie Irving, so we'll start to get into the stars, as I mentioned, but first got to tell you about our friends over at rockauto.com. It's a family-owned business serving auto parts customers online for over 20 years. You can go to rockauto.com and shop for all the auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. I walked out to my car, it wouldn't start. I don't know what that means. It means something isn't functioning right. I don't want to go to a store where a guy walks back into a dusty shelf, hands me a part, and I don't know if it's right or not. You can go over to rockauto.com with a catalog that is unique and remarkably easy to navigate, quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle, and choose from brands, specifications, and prices that you prefer. Best of all, rockauto.com is always reliably low in their prices, and it's the same for the professionals or guys like me and Matt Brooks, the do-it-yourselfers of the world. Why spend up to twice as much on the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now and see the parts available for your car or truck, right? Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box, so they know that we sent you Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. And of course, I would be remiss as we work our way through these playoffs if we didn't talk about Built Bar. They have all those delicious flavors like coconut, coconut almond, cherry. I know that Matt Brooks is a mint brownie kind of guy. You can see it all over his face. He's chowing down on these things as he's punching up those Nets Daily articles. And the reason why is it tastes delicious and it doesn't have any of that weird nutrition bar, odd flavor, like chewing on cardboard. No, 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 sir. The best part is with just 17 grams of protein, not just, up to 17 grams of protein and only 130 calories, only 4 grams of sugar and just 4 grams of net carbs. Delicious all the way through and through and good for you. You can go over to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKED15 and you'll get 15% off your first order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at builtbar.com. Superstars. Matt, that's what we're here for. It's what people want in the playoffs. Superstars. I want to try to go through as many of them as I can in the fashion of how do they have the best version of themselves in these series. You mentioned Kyrie Irving. What does Kyrie need to do in a series where we think, and I don't want to jump ahead here, we think the best defensive matchup in Holiday is probably going to go against Harden, I would think. So that means that Irving has to be on point every single possession, lights out offensively, correct?
That's kind of how I'm looking at it. I think what I would do if I was the Bucks is I would start with Drew on James Harden and just see how it works. If it doesn't work, well, I don't know. If it doesn't work, you're in trouble because James Harden is like the entirety of this offense. But if it doesn't work, maybe you move Drew over to Kyrie. I don't know. But I think I would stick with that. Yeah, and that means Kyrie is going to be defended by Pat Connaughton, Bryn Forbes. I don't know. It's going to be a really weird situation. And they run the risk of, okay, if we're putting Pat Connaughton there, we need Pat Connaughton to hit threes. Because then you're putting a pretty good shooter in Drew Holiday, Pat Connaughton, who's an shooter, Giannis, who's an to really bad shooter, and then Brooke Lopez, who's also kind of an shooter, and then it's Chris Middleton. So it's like they're in a really tricky spot. I mean, losing DiVincenzo is just tricky in that regard. And I think that's probably who would have grabbed that Kyrie assignment. Now, granted, I don't think he would have done a ton, but he certainly would have done more than some of their other options. So yeah, it seems like it's Kyrie's series. The more I look at it, it just feels like he's going to have the easiest time getting his.
Do you think that? Because when I talked with Kane Pittman, I had said, you know, the more the playoffs go on, the more that it feels like it's KD's time, that's what it's building towards. But this matchup with Middleton and Giannis, there's length here to challenge him with. You can even throw PJ Tucker on him for stretches if you want, just to bother him, just to piss him off probably.
Yeah.
I don't think that you're going to shut down KD. That's not something that you do. But you're saying that it's Irving that needs to lead this charge and set the tempo and pace that says, Milwaukee, you need to adjust something here and potentially then start to unlock and open up KD with a little bit more freedom?
Yeah, I think so. You know, you saw it with KD in the regular season in that little mini series. He got his. He's going to continue to do that. But I think what Milwaukee did, and it's something, I mean, you saw it a little bit. I think that was in game two. They put Giannis on KD. Thought that was interesting. You saw it in both games. They put PJ Tucker on KD, who just pushed him off his spots. Like he's five fouls, but B, he's just somebody that's going to bother KD and he's going to make him take that extra dribble. And KD's commented on that, just the idea of, you know, when you're playing against somebody who's got a little bit of a post-up or a face-up game, you want to push them into that extra dribble. That's going to tire them out that much more of the fourth quarter. And by the way, KD looked pretty gassed at the end of those games. Like, he looked tired in both. So that's what you're looking for, is you're looking for this Nets team who are going to have to make up for a lot on the other end of the floor. I mean, a lot. You're going to have possessions where James Harden is doing one of those scram switches where he switches out and guards a post-up player. You're going to have all of them trying to rebound. They're going to be tired on that side of the floor. That's my thinking. And then if you can make that for that on the other end of your side of the floor, if you're Milwaukee, with just making these guys work, it becomes a series. It becomes really, really interesting. So yeah, I think that they have kind of kind of the right requisite guys that you'd want to throw at Brooklyn's big three. The problem is they just don't have those two elite guard defenders, which, I mean, what can you do? But it's Kyrie's series.
Quickly, Kevin Durant defensively, do you think, unlike in the Boston series where he didn't necessarily take on Tatum with consistency, because again, you didn't have to, will the Nets live with the results of Giannis and whoever you're going to kind of throw at him and have KD match up with Middleton with some level of consistency, right? And take him out of it, because I feel like, as obviously we all know what Giannis is, but if you take away a player that I think has established himself as one of the top two closers on this team for late game shots, and the other guy is not necessarily Giannis, and just if I'm giving away a secret here, I think throwing him off of his rhythm is more important to accomplish than what is most likely a task you can accomplish in throwing off Giannis with the personnel.
Yeah. Chris Middleton is absolutely nasty. I mean, he's an awesome player. I've always loved Chris Middleton. I just always have. And, He's going to be a lot of work. I mean, that's not an easy assignment for KD, but KD's also their best option. You know, Middleton's biggest attribute more than anything is just his size and the quickness that he's able to get his shot off. I think that just screams KD. It really does. So that's going to be that'll be a big test. But I think that KD's up to it. He's just proved that so far. But they got to stay on their matchups. I mean, I don't know. I get the switching. I do. You got to fight over a screen once in a while. Like just do it.
Here or maybe you don't. You know, depending on what your strategy is, maybe you
Middleton's
just don't.
Middleton's gonna post these guys up if they do that. You're messing around throwing Kyrie on Middleton, and he's gonna post him up. I'm sorry, and you're not gonna back him down, but he's gonna he is. But he's also gonna turn around and hit that. Just all the gorgeous turnaround shots he's got. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of what you're looking at, but who knows? It's so hard to predict with this Nets team because they have no defensive consistency.
Well, and one of the things you talk about the defensive end, those switches is I wonder about Milwaukee's dedication to try to get some early fouls on a couple of the big three and, put them into just uncomfortable decision-making spots at the end of the first quarter, into the second quarter, going to halftime. Sometimes you can just mitigate being exposed to the big three by getting them off the floor. And a lot of these matchups are going to be more physical from Milwaukee coming at Brooklyn. One of the last things, and then just a kind of a general prediction of the series, but I'd be remiss if we didn't mention Joe Harris. He had that big game in the last series. He's obviously very important. I think he still goes under the radar even more so this year because of the big three. Does he have to do less maybe on the defensive end in terms of the effort and energy that he's put out over the course of the regular season, where now on the offensive end, you may see them look to him early to get him in his rhythm because he should be one of the quote forgotten matchups on that end of the floor for Milwaukee?
Yeah. I'd be curious to see who guards him. Man, I'm trying to think about it right now. I mean, one of the things I was thinking about is if Middleton guards Harden and if Drew guards Kyrie, I wonder if that makes a little bit of sense. I could see it. I could absolutely see it. I've been actually thinking about that more and more. So that would leave.
I don't like the sound of that. So I hope they don't.
I don't know. I mean, it really depends. Harden is just, he's really strong. So, and I know Drew is really strong too. So I don't know, maybe it's kind of a net loss there, but yeah, I think Middleton could keep pace with Harden at the very least. It'll be really interesting to see, but regardless, it'll be one of Middleton or I guess Connaughton guarding Joe Harris, which isn't bad from Milwaukee's perspective. You got to be diligent. You cannot lose that guy in transition. You can't, I mean, Boston, not only they weren't a talented team, but they just beat themselves in certain games. You just saw it at game two, especially. It's these guys are leaving this guy open in transition. You're just coming in with a losing game plan. If you're doing that, come on, man, that's and once they got him going, it's that was over. That game was done. I don't know if you can tell, they're pretty well set up for whatever Brooklyn does.
It should be a really good series. Most betting sites and pundits have the Nets still favored in this, but are we safe to say this is a 7-game series? This is the NBA Finals of the East right now. This is the best matchup that we think we want to see in the playoffs. Does this have to go 7 for satisfaction, or would you know? Or do you think? Let me put it this way: Is it a 7-game series for the Nets to win? Or can it be less than 7 if the Nets are losing this?
I could see anything. I honestly could. And I feel like I know so little about the Nets right now. And I just, that's sort of what I keep coming back to is they just are the weirdest team, man. It's like these three guys and they can score on anybody. They don't put any attention to finer detail. I know they'll tell you, oh, you know, we had a game plan here, and they carry it out for sure. Like they have moments where they carry out the game plan. That game plan is not consistent. And they have not showed us at any point defensively or rebounding wise that they are going to be a team that's consistent in that regard. And when you don't have a backbone of those two things and you're going off scoring and 3-point shooting and all these things like that, it's just really hard for me to make predictions. I think I could see the Nets winning in 5. I could see the Bucks winning in 6. Maybe they come out, punch the Nets in the mouth, and the Nets never recover. I could totally see it happening. Ultimately, I've settled in Nets in 7. I think it's going to be a 7-gamer. I'm going to pick the talent. It's the easiest thing to do, but it's going to be a good one.
With all the conviction in the world, Matt Brooks calls for a Nets victory in 7. At the very least, it should be a really good set of games. And I think for Brooklyn Nets fans, the first round didn't feel like playoff basketball yet. It felt like the setup for this. So a really good matchup will make it exciting. I know everyone's looking forward to it. As always, we thank the amazing Matt Brooks for coming on with us, breaking it down. Hopefully we catch up with him a little bit further down the road. If you're a fan of the podcast, the ways that you can help us is rate and review, subscribe, leave a 5-star review. Tell us that you really enjoy Matt Brooks comes on. Make him feel like he has to come on more. This is the great thing that you can do. Like and subscribe wherever you get your podcast needs. And of course, the friendly reminder, my friends, that you can get all the sports news that you need in under 20 minutes with the Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news from every major sport with the help of all of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast needs fulfilled. No need for quotes, friends. Big thanks to Matt Brooks of Nets Daily. There's more than one of them. There's a whole team. we appreciate it. There's 12 guys on the court, but there's only one net in your heart. And that's Matt Brooks. Man, we appreciate it. We'll catch you. I'm getting strong. On the way out the door, I'm getting real strong sportscaster vibes. Real strong vibes here.
That was good. Thank you for having me on.